There's a snake in my boots.
You cannot use that as the first thing that you say on this podcast.
Why?
Because that is the worst.
There's a snake in my boots, and it's a 1-1 with death touch.
I still hate it.
Why?
I don't know. There's something, I don't know. I have some sort of like crazy negative association.
With Toy Story?
With snake in my boots.
Oh. So you just don't like snakes.
I just don't like that, like someone saying that saying in that voice.
Are you trying to say that you're Indiana Jones?
Yes.
Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I am. Look, Maria, I know that I told you that I was in Chicago last weekend. I wasn't.
Where were you?
I was in the South American rainforest inside of a cave going through several obstacles to retrieve a golden idol, which at the end of all of that, my old rival came and stole it from me, and I escaped barely by jumping into a river and then climbing into a plane. A little biplane that my friend was flying, and he had his snake also in the plane, and that was upsetting.
Oh, I see. So you're afraid of like literally nothing else except snakes.
Just snakes.
I just gotta tell you something.
What?
That is dumb. You should be afraid of so many more things before snakes.
Nope.
Death.
Snakes.
Serial killers.
Snakes.
Goats that have had too much cheese.
Are you telling me I should be more afraid of serial killers than snakes?
Yes.
Maria, how many serial killers are there in the world?
By my last count, 6 million.
How many snakes are there?
Probably 2. I've only ever seen 2. So how do I know there's not more?
That's the point.
I have object impermanence.
You lack object permanence.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if I haven't seen it, then it doesn't exist.
Oh my God. So you think that when you don't see me, that I don't exist?
Right. I think that you dissolve into a fine mist and are gone forever.
So literally you say goodbye to me every time we say goodbye. Expecting
That's why
never
I cry every time. Hey everybody, welcome to Magic the Amateuring.
The show where we talk about Magic the Gathering and the concept of object permanence.
I'm one of your hosts, Maria.
I'm one of your hosts, Megan.
And we've got a great show cooking up for you. I've got it cooking in my toilet like some fine prison wine.
Maria blinked and I'm now a fine mist.
But now I opened up my eyes and you're here again.
And here I am.
That's all that really matters.
It was a really hectic moment for me.
We've got some good news to share for you before we tell you what's in the show. If you guys want some fun in your week, I suggest eating a bag of Skittles. Secondly, we did not get any money from Skittles for this podcast.
I was gonna say, whoa, Maria. Like, Skittles isn't giving us anything.
No, I shouldn't give them any airtime.
So whatever candy you want.
3, watch us on Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Central. We'll be part of the Streamer Showdown.
Holy buckets.
I know, I'm so excited.
I'm super excited.
We are going to draft and we are going to win. Do you hear me?
I hear you.
We're going to take that pod down to where it belongs.
Where does it belong?
In my mouth. I meant like a pea pod.
This got weird really quickly.
I meant like a pea pod because you eat them. Oh God.
Anyways, we are going to be part of the Streamer Showdown.
Yep.
It's going to be great. We're super excited. Tune in to watch us battle it out with other streamers like Kanji.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as Numa the Nummy.
Or Athena, aka Elantris.
Exactly. Like Paul Cheon.
AKA Paul.
Loading Ready Run.
LSV.
Yeah. He's doing the night one, though.
Oh, okay. Well, he won't be in our queue, but you can watch him later in the day. There's 2 separate queues.
Exactly. Ours is the one, 11 a.m. Central Standard Time. That's 1 p.m. for all you West Coasters.
Yeah, and that's some other time for everybody in England.
I don't know what time it is for people in England. Like, quite early.
6 hours difference, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so it's like 1 in the morning. I
tune
can't
in,
do those 5
night
in
owls.
The morning. It's 5 in the morning.
No, there's 6 hours ahead.
What? Oh, no, you're right.
Yeah.
So it works out positively.
Yeah, they'll just be sitting down for a nice cuppa, and we'll be...
Wait, Maria! No, I think that we've said these times all wrong.
Really, why?
Because it's 1 p.m. Eastern time, right? No, it's 1 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
It's 1 p.m. Pacific.
So it's 11 a.m. Central.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Are you?
I promise.
No, you're wrong.
Am I?
You are.
What is it?
It's 3 p.m. our time.
No way.
Yes.
Are you sure?
I'm certain.
Okay, we need to get this straight.
We've really fucked everybody.
Okay, pause.
We have to leave that whole part in there, though. Hey, everybody. I figured out Maria's issue with clocks.
Do you want to know something?
It was grounded in her issues with object permanence. If she doesn't believe in clocks... Because she can't see them when they're not around.
God.
How is she supposed to understand how they work?
Yeah, we're going to be on at
3 p.m.
3 p.m. Central.
Oh, that was embarrassing.
That's 1 p.m. Pacific.
1 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Central. I'm sure several people, everyone has been like yelling at the podcast.
Like, this is so wrong. It won't be the first time. That's for sure.
They've been like, you guys are wrong about time.
You know, I struggled with clocks ever since third grade when you first learned clocks. I did not understand them for the life of me.
Maria, the problem is that your school was teaching clocks at third grade. Clocks
it should have
are
been
a first grade
first
skill.
Grade. I just maybe it was first grade. Who knows? But I remember looking at it and I like for the life of me could not understand why the hour hand moved past the number while the minute hand was somewhere else. I was like, well, no. It's like I didn't know that in between
was stay. You
wanted
to like click forward.
Yes.
The full jump.
The full jump when it's the next hour.
Just like. Whole jump.
And jump. Yeah, because then it's like, oh, that's 5 and that's 15. Oh, that makes sense to me. But like halfway in between 5 and 6, I'm like, what time is that?
It's more poetic the way it does it.
That's probably true. But little Maria, who has trouble with clocks, was just like, I remember just staring at that worksheet like,
I'm pretty sure that's based on like back before we had crazy digital clocks or things like that.
Because it had to, the movement.
It was like the gears, mm-hmm. The way that the gears work, they all have, it has to turn. It couldn't do it. It couldn't do a jump.
Yeah.
Don't ask those gears from the 1600s to jump, Maria.
Yeah, but then digital watches were invented and my life was saved. And I finally knew what time it was.
Tune in 1 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Central. 4 p.m. on the East Coast, and all you mountain motherfuckers, figure it out.
We're going to be drafting BFZ.
Absolutely. It's going to be great.
I'm going to be very happy because I love drafting BFZ.
We love drafting BFZ.
And yeah, it's going to be a really fun pod. You can choose to watch us or any of those other streamers if you're a traitor.
You goddamn traitor.
But usually somebody actually posts a link on Reddit to a Twitch kind of link where you can see everybody playing all at the same time.
Which is super cool.
Yeah. And our address is twitch.tv/magicTheAmaturing, by the way.
And just a hint, we will be in costume.
We will be in costume.
Halloween just around the corner.
Yep.
We will be in costume.
So.
Because we believe in costumes.
Get ready for that.
So, everybody, we teased this topic for you 2 weeks ago. Then we declined to talk about it.
For 2 whole weeks.
We really did. What jerks we are.
We are jerks, but.
Stringing you along like
we're,
that.
We're beef jerky. That's what we are.
Yeah, we sure are. But we are here now to talk to you about. Maria, what was it exactly? This came up for you during Grand Prix Madison.
Yes. So
tell us a little bit about what was going on.
Grand Prix Madison was sealed, and my sealed deck included a very kind of conservative, controlling build with a blue-black Eldrazis. And I was playing a game, and my opponent, at some point after I had beat him, said, what were you kind of doing? You could have won, say, 5 turns earlier.
Yeah, and what was preventing, like, what did he mean? Should you have been attacking him more?
Yeah, I had the card, what is it, Drowner or whatever?
Drowner of Sorrow? Drowner of Hope.
Something gets
drowned.
Drowner
of Sorrow is just alcohol.
It's a 5/5 that comes with some
Drowner of Hope.
Some Eldrazi.
2 scions. You can sack a scion.
Tap a dude. So, right, I could have been sacking scions and attacking for 5. Yeah. Right, for a couple of turns. But I didn't because I still had a full grip of cards that were all very good.
Yeah.
Right, I was already at the 6 mana because I'd cast this card.
Yeah.
And I was kind of just like, I don't really need to be attacking to win right now because I know that I pretty much can't lose with what I've got in my hand. So I'm just going to like let the game kind of progress slowly and not try and rush it, because as you listeners may know, I'm an aggro player and I'm better when I play aggro. Mm-hmm. And when I play control, I sometimes have trouble with the decision of when to hold them and when to fold them. And by that, I mean when to like hold your cards and hold back and just kind of be patient versus when to start attacking my opponent so that they are declined draw steps, which may get them out of the mess which I have placed them in. Mm-hmm. And so that was the dilemma. And I'm like coming to you now, like, should I have been attacking? When do I know that I start attacking? When do I play patiently?
Yeah.
Question mark.
So I will, let's talk first about this specific situation.
Yeah.
Do you recall, did he have like one creature out? Did he have multiple creatures out?
I think he had like three sort of smaller creatures. I don't really remember.
So you, like, you could have done something like, you know, sack a scion to tap one dude so that he doesn't have any profitable block.
Sure, sure.
He can't double block or something
like
that. Right.
I think if he had only had like one creature, I would have been way more inclined.
You would have been way more inclined. That's totally fair. Do you remember what colors your opponent was playing?
Probably.
And most importantly, did it involve the color red?
You know what? That's a good. There's a good chance he's playing red, because why else would I have been so scared? But I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I can't
because
remember.
I think in this, I mean, I understand the question, like if he's playing red, then I would be more scared to be attacking into his stuff. I'm going to counter you there and say that in this current format, Battle for Zendikar, specifically with the card Rolling Thunder in it, if your opponent is playing red, kill that mofo as fast as you can.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Always. If your opponent is playing red, it's just, I always just am, at this point, I started at GP Madison, and I've kept doing it ever since. I always keep tabs if my opponent is playing red of, am I dead to Rolling Thunder right now?
That's a good question to ask yourself. It is a card, and people will have it.
It is a great card. It is a way that you can lose in a situation like that. If you're not keeping tabs on it.
I have a question though.
Yes.
So my counter argument is, when playing against a very aggressive deck, there's a point when that deck will run out of steam and they have to start top decking.
Yeah.
Because your guys are just bigger by the nature of the way the game happens. Yeah. And should you just be more conservative, like, oh, well, I'm going to beat them if I just can hold the ground. There's no way they can get out of it.
I would say in playing control, once you have turned the corner, you need to push through and finish the game. And it is very easy to get stuck in the mindset of, I feel like, so you're approaching control as like, the control game is always about control. It's always about stabilization. But the fact is that control has phases. There's the, I'm not dying, I'm working really hard on not dying. And then eventually you do need to turn the corner, because even though you can think of something of like the red deck running out of steam, or like the aggro deck running out of steam, there's always, usually especially in sealed, if your opponent is playing that, they can always top deck something that's going to be insane. Even if they had like a breaker of armies.
Yeah.
That they're working up towards. You can look at your hand and be like, I'm going to be great, but you don't know what's in their deck.
True.
And I would say the same goes actually for standard, in some ways. You know, aggro decks can still, they are much better. They're much happier if they win in the early game. But you can't count them out.
They may surprise you, especially in standard with cards like Abbot of Carol Keep, which can play you a card off the top of your library, mm-hmm. and also has prowess, and that can potentially trigger all your other little, before they were irrelevant, 1/2s, mm-hmm. and then they get prowess, and then everybody has prowess, and then they attack you for a million.
Yeah,
out of
exactly.
Nowhere.
And so it's important to, in control, not get stuck too much in the holding phase. And another concern is that in Battle for Zendikar, we've seen that games can go really long, especially in sealed. So it also is a concern of, hey, are we on game one? Are we on game two? And I'm only going to tie it up 1-1 and we're going to have to go to game three. You also want to be keeping an eye on the clock.
Yeah, this is a slower format in standard as well. There were more draws, I think, at the Pro Tour than there had ever been. You don't quote me on that, but I believe that's what happened.
And I remember hearing that there was a very high number of draws. So that's also a consideration, is to want to, make sure that you're not going to draw something where you should have been winning, maybe.
Right.
That being said, I do understand, like, you don't ever want to, go from a winning position into a suddenly losing position,
because you made a rash
decision. Yeah. However, I would say having the better board position and having a good grip of cards, you're not going to make a rash decision necessarily.
Right. And thinking back on it, I do think I made the right decision to not attack. Maybe I was winning more by not attacking, and I could have been fine with attacking. I guess I was just taking the more conservative line. Either way, I don't know if there's any way I was going to lose that game. I just felt pretty confident about that. And I was like, here's what you have to do to not lose the game. Kind of my mindset. And that's a question that players probably should be asking themselves, like, when they're ahead. Question, how do I lose this game?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then conversely, when you're about four, or five turns into the game, what am I doing to win this game?
Yeah.
And that's kind of a little level up trick. Like, instead of just like jamming cards every turn, and we talked about this on the Pro Tour, people in standard not being very patient and not playing their cards in their hand, like waiting till it was at their best advantage and crafting the best board state for them, was asking themselves, how do I win? Not necessarily the more rookie question, which is still important, which is, am I using all of my mana this turn?
Yeah.
Am I using my mana most efficiently? Which isn't always correct.
Yeah. Absolutely. I also think it comes down to a little bit of, you have to think of, if you are, whether you're control or whether you're beat down, you need to know when you have an advantage. Like, in this case, it sounds like you have an advantage, right? You have a solid board with a good creature. You have a good grip of cards, and you need to be asking yourself, like, how do I best press this advantage right now? Because a 5/5 takes big chunks out of their life total, fairly quickly. So you can also think of stuff like, hey, is there a way that I can start forcing them to chump block? Like, am I pressing my advantage just by leaving this body on the battlefield? And, like, what if my opponent gets an opportunity to develop their hand more?
Yeah.
Or develop their board more? Is it better for me to just play out my spells and let them play out their spells? Or can I maybe press them into making some poor decisions?
I feel like press the advantage is an actual Magic card.
I think it probably is.
Let's look that up.
All right.
Well, talk about Yoel Larson, who I think I mentioned this before on the Community Cup.
Yeah.
Played with me side by side sometimes, and he would recommend me making attacks that I would not have made if you were not there. And his reasoning was because it will be bad for them when they try and decide blockers. So I've had opponents from me kind of line up my blockers when kind of declaring their attacks, which I don't recommend doing that, because you're giving your opponent information. But what Yoel was doing, which was so smart, was like, look, they have, if they want to make a profitable block, they're going to have to make a bad one or two as well.
Yeah.
And just kind of maneuvering the situation to have the opponent make a really tough, hard, and, pretty bad decision. And I loved that.
Yeah. And I think that is kind of like that's kind of where my brain goes with this situation of, like, yes, Drowner of Hope is good, but it's not necessarily, Are you using it to its best advantage? Are you pressing the advantage? 2 green instant, Cons of Tarkir uncommon.
I knew it.
Up to 2 target creatures get +2/+2 and
yes, trample until end of turn. That's what it is.
Not cons. It was dragons.
Dragons. Okay. Yep.
So there you go.
Okay. I mean, it's a tricky road, right? That's why Magic's not an easy game.
Yeah. It really is. And so I guess, yeah, it's definitely always you're trying to strike the balance. You're trying to strike a balance between not making a rash decision that is going to put you at a disadvantage. You're trying to not give your opponent too many opportunities to draw out of it. You're trying to make the most of what you have in your hand and what you have available on the board.
I really like thinking that way. What's the best way for me to press my advantage right now that I'm winning?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can even think of it in terms of individual cards. Like maybe you're at a stalemate, but is there a particular card that maybe you could be using more effectively? Like a creature or a spell that you need to wait and use most optimally.
Kind of like a corporation, you know? They've made a lot of money. What are they going to do? Make more money. Megan, are you dying right now?
Am I dying? I'm going to be fine.
Do you have consumption?
Yes.
Oh, God.
I'm going to pull a Moulin Rouge exit on this one. Which means die.
Put that in the Urban Dictionary.
A Moulin Rouge exit just means someone died.
Well, specifically of consumption,
specifically
right?
Specifically of consumption. Right. No, you're correct. I've just been battling like allergies or a cold for literally a week now, and it's the worst.
Megan, you should consider using some equipment like Sword of Fire and Ice if you're battling.
Is that like Vicks Vapor Rub?
Yeah.
If there's anything that's fucking fire and ice, it's Vicks Vapor Rub and Icy Hot.
Or Bengay.
Yeah. Which is Icy Hot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Sword of Fire and Ice. Oh my god. Let's make all of the swords common, like medicinal over-the-counter remedies.
Sword of Feast and Famine.
I don't know what that is. Probably Beano.
Feasting on food and there's a famine of farts.
Yeah.
And if there's any kind of famine I want to be in, it's a fart famine.
Megan, do you remember the fart famine in Ireland?
Yeah, it was a great time.
Everybody no one just farted. Stayed. No one farted. We all stayed. It was magical. That's why there's a fart shape in Lucky Charms to this day. That's not a cloud. No, that's a fart marshmallow.
What a nightmare. I'm never going to look at a bowl of Lucky Charms the same again.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is a fart marshmallow. Anyways, just to round out our discussion, I think it's always... It's interesting to ask yourself the question of like, okay, am I playing conservatively or am I playing like outright? Like, am I playing conservative or am I being afraid of ghosts or of like of things that aren't there?
I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Well, there you go then.
Standard corner. It's just a standard regular corner, not even any paint on this corner.
Normal ass corner, man.
Super average corner.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, standard's been happening now with Battle for Zendikar thrown into the mix, and things have been getting hot and heavy up in the standard world.
Dark Jeskai is walking around like they own the goddamn place.
Ugh.
They are just, you know, wiping their feet on the carpet.
Yeah.
Rubbing their noses on the counter.
Oh, sick. Is that what you do in addition to touching people's KitchenAid mixers?
I rub my nose on their counters.
Yeah.
Yep. Second thing I do.
Got it.
Second thing I do. Just trouncing. Just straight trouncing.
Yeah.
One GP, Quebec City.
Wow. And there was like every deck was like
four copies at least in the top eight. Just absurd. Just absurd. But there was also a sweet green Eldrazi ramp deck.
Yeah, that was kind of cool.
Featuring Jotty Offshoot and Ulamog.
It was very strange. Like why is Jotty? I mean, I guess you're playing a lot of lands, but...
Yeah, and I mean, you got to gain life. You got to die so you can cast an Ulamog.
It has Ulamog. It has Eugene, the spirit dragon. And like, what other creatures?
Ramp.
That was
ramp,
it. It was
ramp,
just all ramp,
ramp
and those guys.
Ramp for days.
That's kind of crazy. I want to like see it play. I'm going to go back and watch videos of that because I want to see
it
that.
It had so many spells that we are familiar with. Natural Connection.
That's so weird.
I'm trying to think of our other Sylvan Scrying.
Mm-hmm.
Explosive Vegetation. Ramp for days.
So I decided to fight back against the man, and the man being the fact that standard decks are really expensive these days.
They totally are.
Especially if you have one with a good old friend Jace in it. Jace is very expensive.
Vryn's prodigy. More like Vryn capitalism's prodigy.
Okay. Yep.
Nailed it. Shut up.
So I found this awesome deck on mtggoldfish.com. They do a series called Budget Magic, and you can go on there and play cheaper versions of sort of standard decks or their own brews that they make. And they made this deck that is really fun for all of you aggro lovers out there to play. It's Budget Eldrazi. And this also excites me because I was hoping for an Eldrazi deck to kind of make its way into standard, because Eldrazi are pretty cool, am I right? And we've seen Ulamog, but I wanted something that was like all Eldrazi, all the tizime. And so that's what this deck
tizime.
Is. The superstars of this deck are cards like Endless One, which is, you know, just X in the casting cost. And you usually play it on turn one or something like that. That's what it's meant to be, a one drop, because this deck is very aggressive.
Ooh.
And it makes use of cards like Endless One and Sludge Crawler, which is also a one drop. And then guess what you do, Megan? You put Ghostfire Blade on those mofos.
Oh, snap.
Give them all +2/+2 because it only costs one to equip if they're colorless. Brilliant. So it's really fun. It abuses with cards like Vile Aggregate, which has Trample and usually has a high power if you can get a lot of Eldrazi out. Forerunner of Slaughter, Wasteland Strangler is kind of a kill spell in this deck. Dust Stalker does not have to bounce back to your hand because you probably have colorless creatures out there. And then you have a card like Swarm Surge and you just blast them and they have no good blocks.
Yeah. So tell us how it's been playing out for you.
I mean, it's been playing great. And this deck is competitive with tier one standard decks.
All right.
Straight up. And, well, of course, those decks are a little bit better because they're tier one or whatever. This deck can give them a run for their money, and I think that's pretty awesome.
Nice. Tell us specifically. So, like, sure. What are you, like... Give us a couple of, just general ideas of some matchups that you've played and what they've been like.
Well, this deck also, if you want to pay a little more money, that when this deck was published, it would cost 3 tickets to build. When I bought it, it would cost 10 tickets. The day after, it was 16 tickets, so I don't know how much it costs anymore. But okay. When I bought it, it was 10. I added in Wild Slash and Exquisite Firecraft, Pia and Kira Nalar. Mm-hmm. You can add in it as well as Hangerback Walker, of course, one Hangerback. But those cards, so expensive. So I have like one Hangerback in there. And then if you want to add in expensive lands, you can. Otherwise, don't. And I mean, obviously, it's going to play better if you have the expensive land in there. Yeah, I have a couple copies, but I definitely do not have the full playset of the great lands to make this deck like 300 online or whatever.
Yeah.
But it still plays out great. So let's see. I'm trying to think of matchups I had with it. Basically, it just runs people over. And it matches up, I think, even pretty well against red, mono red aggro strategies.
All right.
Because it just doesn't care. You know, like.
Yeah, absolutely.
They can't burn out your Vile Aggregate.
You race to dying.
Because it's got 5 toughness. They can't kill that. You know, I played against some Jeskai builds with Jace, and like, quite frankly, I don't care about Jace. I just kind of like attack, and I can also kill him with Wasteland Strangler. So,
all right,
goodbye, Jace.
Nice.
Or Wild Slash for that matter.
Nice.
I played against, another Jeskai build that had Mantis Riders in it. And again, I didn't really care because Wasteland Strangler kills Mantis Rider. And when you give your creatures +2/+0 on first strike, there's no way they can block. There's straight up no way for that deck to block. Mm-hmm. I played against some Siege Rhinos. I also just ignored the Siege Rhinos and let it...
Siege Rhino! You
know, let it eat something.
Get out of here!
My rest of my guys are going to get in. Like, take down some guy. I'm still going to get you to 0.
Siege Rhino, I hate you.
Yeah, Megan, I smashed some Siege Rhinos for you.
I'm really happy.
Just for you, girl.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll probably post this deck online. I'll play through it. I'll jump in an A-man or something, and so you guys can see. It's going to be a little janky because I don't have the proper mana base, but I have the budget version. It's totally fine. Mm-hmm. Go out there and play it, and you can kind of see how the deck plays out. So look for that on magicallyamateuring.com or follow us on Twitter at MTAcast to see when I post that. But I've been liking it. Megan, what's been catching your eye in Standard?
Standard... I'm jonesing for some control.
Oh, what a surprise.
I always am. You guys, I love Control. I'm sorry. At this point, I feel like you've all known me long enough. This is not a surprise to you. I was a Sphinx's Rev girl from the first time that I cast one, and I always will be.
Yep.
So there, at GP Quebec City, in the top eight, there is an Esper Control deck, that's what I've got my eye on.
Ooh.
Is playing four of goddamn it, Jace, Capitalism's Prodigy.
Well, that deck's gonna cost a pretty penny.
That's true, but actually, I already have most of it.
Excellent.
So you know, I'm still working it out. You know, the Jaces are I'm borrowing and begging where I can so that I don't have to purchase them.
Yeah.
And putting it together, because I love nothing more than not letting other people do what they want to do.
Classic blue player. Get out.
No, you can't cast that. No. I'm going to kill it.
No.
I'm going to kill it. You can't have it. I'm very excited to finally get it together in the next couple of days here.
Cool.
Give it a run through.
Yeah, a lot of people are kind of saying that this budget Eldrazi deck, which, you know, has become very popular online, which is kind of noted by the shift upward in prices, is that hopefully it could become maybe tier one with the release of Oath of the Gatecrash if it has more Eldrazi support.
Oath of the Gatewatch.
What did I say?
Gatecrash. Well, that's back in the day.
We're going back in time to Oath of the Gate.
Oh, yeah.
Oath of the Gatecrash. Oh, God. Oath of the Gatewatch. If there's more Eldrazi support, hey. This deck could get actually tier one, which is fingers crossed what happens, but I don't know.
Yeah, man.
Because I would definitely play it.
I'll just give you so there were four Dark Jeskai lists in the top eight at Quebec City. There was this red-green Eldrazi, which they also played Hangerback Walker and Dragon Lord Atarka.
Oh, okay.
But those are their creatures.
That's it.
That's what they've got going on. Then there was a sweet four-color Rally deck, which I have very much enjoyed. The Standard Super League, or the Super League, had like their last chance qualifier, and you can watch Li Shiqian play it, and he won his side of the bracket, and I love watching him play any kind of combo deck. Man is a combo master. I highly recommend going back watching him play some four color rally.
Cool.
Does some sweet things with it. It's so cool. They use Zulaport Cutthroats to just like drain people's life away by sacking things to Nantuko husks.
So kind of like Aristocrats in a way.
Yes, it's very similar. But it also has this Rally the Ancestors combo piece where you get everything back and then you sack it all again.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's very cool. It's super cool. And then there was an Abzan list.
Megan doesn't even want to talk about
it. Let's not even talk about it. So yeah, check out, hopefully in the future, Maria, as she mentioned, will post some sweet Eldrazi decks. Deck and games, and hopefully I'm gonna get some Esper Control up and running for any of you Control aficionados out there, or those of you who think maybe I'm a Control player.
Nobody thinks that,
but you don't want to admit it yet. I'm here to tell you it's okay.
It's not okay.
I love you for who you are.
I've got some pills you can take.
I love
you
for the fun hater that you are.
If you feel Control coming on, take one of these pills.
I think that you're great because you want to play all the magic and let your opponent play none.
That's not playing magic.
Yes, it is. I'm playing so much more magic.
You
want to
play solitaire. That's the game you're thinking of. How about some Battle for Zendikar draft, Megan?
Oh, snap. This draft format is addicting as all get out.
Megan keeps telling me throughout the day, she'll send me a message like, Maria, I need to play BFC draft now. And I'm like, girl, I feel you. So do I.
Yes. I don't know what it is, but I just constantly want to play BFC.
Ugh, so do
I. I want to draft it. I constantly
There's
want
not
to.
Not enough hours in the day.
Oh, just always. Love it. Love it so hard, man.
Why do you think you love it so hard?
You know, I don't know. I just feel like there's so many, even though I've been playing a lot, I feel like there's things that I haven't explored yet. Cards that I haven't optimally played yet.
Is this a metaphor for your prepubescent body?
What?
I'm sorry.
That's the creepiest thing you've ever said on the show.
I'm sorry. Every episode you say that, by the way.
Yeah, well, every episode you get creepier, so...
Do you know, this is a story for some listeners who don't know, that somebody at like a tournament came up and was like, or did they email us? I can't remember. They're like, is it just us or is like Maria like really creepy towards
someone
you?
Someone said that in person. Yeah. It was the best moment ever because I was like, yes,
yes,
she's legitimately creepy to me.
That's so funny.
It was great.
Oh, God.
I felt like people finally understood what I was going through.
Megan needs a support group.
I really do.
So, yeah, there's just a lot of different strategies is what she's trying to say.
There really are. In the past week, I've been really digging Devoid right now.
Yeah, man.
I drafted a sweet black-red Devoid deck that had Molten Nursery, and of my 23 spells, 20 were colorless.
Sick.
I think I had like the three that weren't were like it was like all, it was just like a couple of removal spells. I had like a Stone Fury and an Outnumber and then like some other final
question.
How
many Molten Nurseries would you run in that kind of deck?
In that kind of deck,
would you put in two?
I would consider putting in two. Yeah,
that would be straight sick.
That would be straight crazy, bro.
Cool. I would actually like to see if somebody's done that. That'd be
I'm
interesting
sure that
to me.
They have. If you have done the double Molten Nursery deck,
let us know.
This deck legitimately won on the play on a mulligan to five.
That's awesome.
And like not even something crazy happened to my opponent or like I got exceedingly lucky. It was just like the deck was just very good.
Yeah.
It just like I got a Molten Nursery out and managed to 2-for-1 my opponent on enough random things that the card advantage
that eventually
was overcome.
Yeah.
I had 2 Grip of Desolation.
Ooh, that'll 2-for-1
them. I love that card.
Did you get a animated land with that?
Yeah.
Nice.
So yummy.
Nice.
So yummy. And then just the other day I drafted a blue black Devoid deck, which was again just like so great. I had the pleasure of actually for the first time hitting someone with a Windrider Patrol.
Oh, great card.
Oh, there is.
You like scrying too?
I love scrying too. It just felt like as soon as I hit them, I was like, yeah, this is what winning feels like.
Megan's just evilly cackling as she's scrying. Uh-huh. I drafted green white the other day. Contrary to what Owen Turtenwald will tell you, I think green is a fine color. and it beat face, and it wasn't anything special whatsoever. It was just kind of following the mode of my first my draft at the Community Cup, my actual draft,
yeah.
Which was green, white, good stuff. And it was just like 2 drops,
yeah.
Pump for my 2 drops, and then some stuff later.
Yeah.
Like the end, you know?
Yeah. And I've noticed that having a good curve in this format is just very strong. It's what you want to be doing.
I agree.
The thing that I noticed about this blue-black deck was that I had a Breaker of Armies at 8. And I had a Ruin Processor at 7 and 2 channelers to help get there. But it was like those were just as important as the fact that I have like multiple Culling Drones and was putting on good early pressure. And I had like a couple of Flyers at 3 and 4 and 5. Like good pressure across the curve. Because I feel like it's when I don't win is when I don't get the balance right. When I have too much early or too much late.
I agree.
The balance is needs to be in tune, bro.
That's not true for all draft formats, so
it's
a good rule to follow, but especially important in this one we're finding out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Megan and I drafted a really sweet red-blue deck, which some people say is one of the best decks in the format.
Yeah.
And we played on stream the other day, so if you want to catch us streaming, we're trying to stream more often now, once a week.
Yeah, once a week.
And you can find us, as we said earlier on the show, before I knew what time was, twitch.tv/magictheamateur.
Yes.
Oh, if you follow us, it'll tell you when we're live. So, yeah, if you want some sick updates, do that.
Get 'em, bros. You guys, we've been promising you Cold Snap.
Yeah, we have.
For weeks. I left it at home again.
Again.
I left
again,
it at
everybody.
Home.
Again.
I promise. I feel so bad. Someone was so kind they gave us this beautiful cold snap pack.
And it's just stayed at Megan's house.
To open it.
Cold and alone for 2 weeks.
Next week, I promise.
I don't believe you.
I promise.
You're like the boy who cried wolf at this point.
I'm the girl who cried cold snap. Cold snap!
Yeah, that's what it is. Yep. But we're going to do something else fun, which is we're going to crack a pack of BFC and we're going to play this game, which we haven't played on the show for a long time, which is These Cards Should Date.
These Cards Should Date. In this case, it's not cards from the whole set. It's just going to be cards from this pack. Maria and I will pick a card. Mm-hmm. We're going to each pick his partner. We're going to make our case for it.
Make a case for the great date.
No card in a booster should be alone.
I agree.
Except there's 15. So somebody's going to be alone. It's just the way the world works.
Maybe we'll be lucky and it'll be some kind of vampire. Vampires, you know, they're kind of loners. They live for a long time. It's really hard to make and keep relationships, especially if one of you is not a vampire. It's really complicated. I'm not a vampire, so like, why would I know that?
All right, let's pick our first bachelor.
Bachelor, okay.
Is Ruin processor.
All right, so
spread
these babies out. He's got some long arms, ladies.
He really does.
I don't know if you're into that. He also has a arms. You can see his rib cage. So he's been dieting.
That's the way I like him. Rib cage showing. That's weird.
It's slightly strange. You might need to feed him a sandwich or two. But let's see, who do we have here? Ruin processor.
You know, I'm really feeling outnumber. I really like outnumber.
Plus ruin processor?
Yes. Like, look, they have the same arm situation going on.
Yeah, that's true.
They both got the double arms.
Yeah. But don't you think, also outnumber could never, you know, have a hard time killing ruin processor. So that's good for a relationship.
Exactly. It's when,
that's how I pick a partner.
When one person has a hard time killing the other, that's when you know you're meant to be together.
You give him a gun and you're like, I'm having a really hard time killing you right now. And you're like, let's get married. Want. That's what I want.
That's
it's the
I
people
want.
Who pull that trigger that you
want
to
you don't want to get married to.
Run
Great
quickly.
Thing to know. Great thing to know. So Maria, unless you have a better option here.
Sure. This is a rough one because part of me wants to say that I want Oracle of Dust and Ruin Processor to get together.
Okay, but they're both processors, Maria.
You saying that two people can't have the same occupation?
Look, and no, I'm be just in a relationship? That they both just want everything. They both want to take things.
Okay.
You can't have two people who want to take things. Outnumber wants to give damage away. It's so giving.
What about ruin processor and complete disregard?
What? Complete disregard is too tentacly.
Well, think about this. Ruin processor cannot, again, be killed by complete disregard. And
that's
also
established most important.
This ruin processor kind of looks like he doesn't give a fuck, and he's a 7-8, like whatever. And then complete disregard obviously doesn't give a fuck.
I don't know that complete disregard should be in a relationship with anybody.
Oh, you're saying like it's probably some kind of like
is our loner.
Psychopath.
Yes. Complete disregard. Fuck you.
All right, who do you think is the best pair for Resolute Blade Master?
Resolute Blade Master, I'm for sure just feeling this giant worm.
Megan just said on this podcast, and I quote, write this down, I am feeling this giant worm.
No!
End quote.
No, that's not what I said.
What did you say?
I said Resolute Blade Master. Feeling this giant worm.
I don't think that's what you said.
Damn it.
I need somebody to make me a ringtone stat. Thank you.
Maria, you're the one with the recording.
Okay. Well, people can download this. There's technology.
That's the worst thing I've ever said.
Well, I think the best mate for Resolute Blade Master is Core Blade Whirl.
Joe, you're just saying that because they're both allies and you think allies should be with allies.
I think there's Blade Whirl in her name and there's Blade Master in his name, so they could have a happy sword marriage together.
Okay, you're probably right.
They're both into weaponry and attacking.
Yeah, they are both into weaponry.
I think they're a pretty cute couple.
I think there's going to be some like overlap in the things that they provide because like, you know, she gives first strike.
He gives double strike.
He gives
it's a little
strike.
Redundant.
Like he's like overcompensating for what she already does.
So it's like if
she's like, hey, look, I'm really great
He's like, oh, look at me, though. At,
you know, stabbing people with swords. And he's like, I'm really good at stabbing people with swords and shooting them with arrows. She's like, well, fuck you. The sword got them dead in the first place, so.
I mean, yeah. Would you ever date somebody who was also a great baker? Or would you just be like, no, you're redundant, asshole?
No. Like, Maria, you can never have enough good baking.
Okay.
All right.
So those two are together. Yeah. Great.
I think, for me, I think actually it's Broodhunter Worm and Seek the Wilds.
Oh, definitely. Like,
that's all that Broodhunter Worm wants.
To seek the wilds.
Is to seek the wilds.
Because he's hungry.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it already has a kid. I mean, or else it's looking for a brood. And what helps when you're looking? Seeking. Nailed it.
I'm going to go ahead and say that ally encampment goes with fortified rampart.
Yeah.
Like, they should date. Like, what does an encampment need? A wall.
Yeah.
What does every guy need? A wall.
Like, when I look for somebody in relationship, I'm always looking for somebody that has a lot of walls built up around them already. That I've got to smash with a hammer.
Yep.
Give me a project.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
No thanks.
All right. See, I'm feeling spell shrivel and complete disregard.
Yeah, you're right. They both got,
like, the sloopy thing going on.
Those two are great.
Which is, by the way, you guys, sloopy is our new synonym for, like, tentacly.
Sloopy. Sloopy arms.
Sloopy arms.
Okay, great pair, great pair. Yeah,
which just, you know,
leaves us. So, what about this? Blighted Step and Skyland Cascade getting together?
Yeah, I think that's
or
fine.
Or Blighted Step and, what is
actually,
this?
I feel like Oracle of Dust, like, that's all Oracle of Dust wants is to sit on a Blighted Step and kill more people.
He just kind of looks like he's sitting on a Blighted Step.
They already look similar.
There you all go. Right,
there we go. This assassin, you know, gets to just look at this beautiful empty horizon. Yeah,
guess what? It was a vampire, just like I said.
What? We didn't even plan that.
That's so weird.
That's so creepy. Vampire Illuminati.
The vampire stands alone, I guess.
The vampire stands alone. Hi-ho, the murderer. The vampire stands alone.
No. Why do we say hi-ho, the Dario? What does that mean?
It's because it's a song about a farmer.
Is it like dairy? Oh.
No, like dairy. Like, a dairy is also not just like the food group. It's like the place. You know,
well,
like,
yeah.
A place where there's a lot of dairy.
Oh, it's so like hi-ho, the dairy, comma, oh, exclamation point.
No, I think it's just like they put oh on there so that it went with you know, the song.
Oh.
To make it more musical.
Hey, let's go down to the Dario. Said nobody ever. Let's... Stupid songs. Do you want to know a fun fact about, you probably already know?
Sure, tell me.
About London Bridge. You ever play that when you were a kid?
Yeah.
London Bridge is falling down. Or falling down. London Bridge is falling down. What did they say then?
London Bridge is falling down, my fair lady.
And then one of the other lines is, ashes, ashes, we all fall down.
Oh, yeah.
Because the Black Plague.
Yeah, it's about the Black Plague. Just like Ring Around the Rosie is about the Black Plague.
Wait, was that the song I was singing?
Ring Around the Rosie.
Oh, my God. No,
I think that you're thinking of Ring Around the Rosie.
I am, because Pocket Full of Posy, the flowers, so they don't smell like death.
Yep.
This is sick.
Yeah. I think London Bridge is falling down. It's just about, you know, like, English people being fundamentally insecure in their infrastructure.
Now let's talk about another disturbing song. Happy Birthday. Secret meaning. You're a year older, 1 year closer to death.
Oh, yeah. That's the subtext.
Spooky.
Happy Halloween.
Oh, it is almost Halloween.
We should have done Trick or Treat with the cards.
Son of a bitch.
Well. You guys, I'm really sorry we failed you like that. We'll do Trick or Treat next week. We're going to be the family that, like, you know.
That's our tradition, doing a holiday thing the week after it happens.
Yeah, that's true. So we will bring you a Trick or Treat next week.
I'm so mad at myself right now.
I'm so mad at you.
Well, everybody, that's our show this week. I'm sorry we disappointed you in a lot of ways.
We really did. What did we bring you? Disappointment.
But you know what? Where else can you get that disappointment every week? Guaranteed.
Not in your pumpkin bucket.
What?
That's what when you go trick-or-treating in your pumpkin bucket.
Do you remember McDonald's would give out little buckets for Halloween that the Happy Meals were served in?
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Weird. Anyway, you guys, somebody kicked my pumpkin in.
Those fuckers.
The day after I made it.
That's so upsetting.
Before I even had a chance to put a candle in it.
That's jerk faces.
I came home, my fence was open, and my pumpkin was kicked in.
That's the worst.
I am like, I was more upset about that than anything I've been upset about in a long time.
Like, if it had been me, I probably would have legit cried.
I think, I don't know what to do. Like, I just want to, like, throw it into the middle of the road and be like, is this the destruction you want, punks?
Yeah.
I'm just so mad. I spent so long carving that. You were there.
I know.
You guys, I'm sorry I had to share this memory with you, but I'm just still, like, dealing with it.
It's okay.
I'm still dealing with the trauma.
It's okay, bro.
Anyway.
Hey, thanks for listening to our show. You can find us at magicthamateuring.com, at MTAcast on Twitter. You can listen to us on iTunes, on Stitcher, on MTGcast.
Yeah, just go to
themeatery.org.
Hold up, though. I don't know if I want to say that anymore because we're just not posting on there.
Oh, we're not? Okay.
Let me. I'll just write a note. I know. I'm not. I'm not sure. Because it's just like I ask them questions and then I try and get it done and it just doesn't get done.
Okay.
All right. Will you say that list again? Without
Hey, everybody. You can find us at magicthamateuring.com, on Twitter at MTAcast. Listen to us on Stitcher, iTunes, and MTGcast.
Yeah, come and find us, you guys, online. I'm horny_unicorny.
I am ice cream socialist.
If you want to become a part of the family and support this show, if it does more for you than just give you disappointment, find us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/MTAcast and throw a dollar away, or more if you're so inclined. It's less than you probably spend a week on your horrible, horrible cable provider.
fuck those guys.
And those guys just make you mad, let's admit it.
Let's be honest, they're all evil.
We've got some sweet rewards for you up there, so check those out as well. Just a reminder once again, 3 p.m. Central, we will be streaming in the Streamer Showdown this Thursday. And yeah, I'm really excited because next week we have an interview with the lead designer of the Legend Cube.
The
Legendary Cube on Magic Online. And we've got a Commander 2015 spoiler card for you.
Oh, snaps.
It's our first ever spoiler, you guys.
We're super excited.
This is a big deal.
We can't handle it.
I handled it.
I puked.
I literally shit myself. See you guys next week.
Good luck. High five.